I've got diphtheria crushing my esophagus. I've got Ebola virus dripping from my nose. I've got the leprosy of the heart valve, exacerbating my incredible woes. I want to take my brain out and blast it with the wave, an ultrasonic echographic and a pulsating shave. I want a magic pill for my ailments, the health equivalent to Citizen Kane. And if I don't get it now in the tablet, I think I'm doomed and I'll have to go insane. I want a requiem for my disease, so I'm paging Dr. Steve.
Dr. Steve!
Yo,
yes, my friends, it is Weird Medicine, the podcast, the addendum to the February 2nd show, where we clean up our mess and answer all the questions that came in that we never got to during the show. I am Dr. Steve. I'm here with my friends, P.A. John.
Hey.
And P.A. Jill.
Hello.
And we're answering your medical questions tonight. You can, if you have any questions, you can email us at drsteve202@gmail.com or
pajohn202@gmail.com.
All right. And soon, probably pajill202@gmail.com, because this little partnership seems to be working out pretty well so far. Welcome, P.A. Jill. We're always glad to have a little estrogen on the team.
Thanks. Glad to be here. Okay. I might have to change my email address, though, and be a little more original.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll get back to you on that.
Sexychick6969@gmail.com.
Maybe. I'm going to play with it a little bit.
All right.
About Nita Rectal.
Shut up, John.
See, I like it. Whenever Jill starts yelling at John, it makes me very happy. All right. Well, let's get some of these questions out of the way. These are all questions that were sent in during the show. We always give out our email address during the show. We got a lot of listeners, and people email in, and maybe they're shy, or maybe they can't, for whatever reason, they email us during the show in good faith, because I always give out the email address, and then we never get to any of them. We don't even check the email during the show.
Well, you have so many phone calls. It's just, there's not enough time.
And we're just crazy, hepped up on adrenaline, and trying to just keep things moving, and yeah, we just don't have... There's no way. So we kind of came up with this idea to do this Weird Medicine addendum where we get all of these questions answered. And this isn't all of them. I have got a list of hundreds of questions. A lot of them we've answered personally. Some of them we put up on our website at drsteve.com. And the rest of them we're answering here. So there you go. So anyway, what you got there, Jill?
I've got several questions tonight. We're going to start with this one. I'm a 42-year-old gentleman in good health now. I have had 3 surgeries, however, in the last year. I have had diverticulitis and needed a bowel resection in December of 2006.
Okay, let me just interrupt you.
Okay.
Diverticulitis is a condition of the bowel, of the large bowel for the most part, where you get these little pockets that pooch out of the bowel and can get inflamed, cause a lot of pain, cause bleeding, and sometimes have to be cut out. And so a bowel resection is where you take out a piece of the bowel. So
correct.
Go ahead.
Okay. During that surgery, the surgeon nicked my left testicle and caused a very painful infection.
Yikes.
Every time I moved, it felt like I was being punched in the balls. It was awful, needless to say. I went to a pain management doctor, and he prescribed a Duragesic patch and Dilaudid.
Okay, let me interrupt you there.
Okay.
Duragesic is a very powerful narcotic that we usually use as a second-line agent. It's not usually the first thing we go to. I'm assuming that his surgeon had put him on something less drastic before that. Duragesic is a patch. It's got a narcotic in it that goes directly into the bloodstream after diffusing through the skin. You don't have to take it in pill form. And Dilaudid is a pretty potent oral narcotic. Go ahead.
So he tried those meds for 8 months until he had his left testicle removed.
Yikes.
He stopped taking the meds, but he got very sick. He had insomnia and depression. In August of 2007, developed an incisional hernia. And at the side of the bowel resection, the pain was terrible, and he again was taking Dilaudid. He no longer takes the medication, but he still craves them every day and wonders if the cravings will ever stop.
That's a great question. Number one, we need to applaud this guy for, number one, getting off the medication and allowing himself to crave it, but not giving in to those cravings and going out and buying the stuff on the street like a lot of people do.
Right.
That's a big problem in this country. Prescription drug abuse is now eclipsing illicit drug abuse. In other words, medications that you can be prescribed legally are now being abused more than things like cocaine and pot and stuff like that. So it's a real problem. This guy is not falling into that. I really congratulate him. This is what he needs to do. He needs to get into a group, a support group for former users of narcotics, and talking to other people that have been through the same situation and have the same cravings is very therapeutic. Having been a tobacco addict, and I know it's not the same thing, but I know that the craving does go away over time. Having talked to lots of people who have had narcotic addictions, the craving is very slow to go away, but it does go away, or at least diminishes to the point where you can control it. Cocaine addiction's a lot harder, I think, to kick, because those cravings can be triggered just by seeing white powder and smelling smells that are similar to smells that you smelled when you were using. So that's a really, really tough one. Narcotic addiction can be beaten. He's already beaten it. He just needs to stay off. And he's congratulated. Go find a group and join it, and he should be okay over the long run. All right?
Very cool. Good. Very good. Moving on to another question. I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, or otherwise known as MS, in 2002, and I was wondering if you knew of any alternative medicines that might help. First, if you can address alternative medicines and MS in general, and second, if any inexpensive alternatives. I was denied by the SSA for disability, so I have been living off savings since I applied for disability in 2005.
Okay. I really think that yes, we can talk about some alternative approaches to the treatment of multiple sclerosis. Let's talk a little bit about multiple sclerosis, and then let's talk about what this person in particular needs to do, which is to talk to his or her doctor about getting a more firm letter with the Social Security Administration. But let's talk a little bit about multiple sclerosis. Everybody knows what it is. It's a chronic progressive illness that affects the nerves of the brain, spinal cord, and other parts of the central nervous system. About 2.5 million people worldwide have it, probably 400,000 cases in the United States. It can cause weakness, vision changes. It can cause all kinds of problems, and it can cause some problems with thinking, too. People have three kinds of MS. There's relapsing, remitting MS. That's about 80% of people, where they'll have these attacks and then it will kind of get better. It may get all the way better, may not quite get all the way better, and then they'll have another attack. And so it kind of goes in this stepwise approach. There's another kind that's called primary progressive multiple sclerosis. That's about 10% of people, where it just continues to get worse over time. They don't have these periods where they get better. They just continue to get worse. There's another one called secondary progressive multiple sclerosis that starts off relapsing, remitting, and then ends up getting just worse and worse and worse all the time. Now, there are treatments for this stuff, and they're very, very expensive. The standard treatments are things like beta-seron, which is an interferon, which there won't be a test afterward, but it's a medication that is disease-modifying, which means that it changes the course of the disease. Now, this stuff is insanely expensive. It's made by Bayer, the people that make aspirin. But what's cool about it is that if you can't afford it, there is a patient assistance program that you may be able to get the medication for free. And what I really want this person to do is go to the National Multiple Sclerosis Society website, and it is www.nationalmssociety.org, and that's all. National MS Society is all mashed together with no spaces. And there's all kinds of resources there for people who have MS that don't have insurance. Now, this person in particular needs to get to his healthcare professional and needs to get a stern letter going back to the Social Security Administration regarding this person's disability, because
Yeah, because typically you'll apply the first time, and it seems as though every person that applies for disability always gets rejected the first time, no matter what the reason. You don't have to even – you cannot have arms, legs, tongue, head. I mean, it doesn't matter. You get denied from the SSA. And so if you don't actually have – a letter from your doctor, then you can always get a lawyer. And there's a lot of lawyers out there that actually specialize in that sort of thing. So that would be our recommendation, is keep going.
Yeah. Don't give up on this one. If you're truly disabled and can't work, we need to get you some help. Now, if you get SSI, Social Security, if you're approved, then you, Jill, that just, now I've completely.
I know, I looked at it too.
Jill's stretching over there, and then it made me go blank. What was I saying?
Sorry.
If you apply for SSI and you're approved, after 2 years you get Medicare, and then you get that's decent insurance that everybody takes, and you'll get treatment. Now let's talk about this person asked about alternative treatments.
Yes.
I did a pretty extensive literature review on PubMed.org. By the way, for those of you that are interested in this stuff, you can always go to PubMed.org. It's free for everyone. You can do literature searches on your own and look and see what's in the medical scientific literature. And I did a pretty extensive search, didn't find very much on alternative treatments that have been studied that work for multiple sclerosis. But I did find one interesting thing, that people who were placed on omega-3 or purified fish oil tended to do better than people who were not on this supplementation. So that might be something that this person could try. It's not going to be disease modifying, but it may slow the progression. We don't know. At the very worst, it shouldn't hurt.
Right. It's good for other things too. Good for heart health, good for cholesterol, all those things.
Yep.
And probably an exercise program would help as well.
Well, if you have muscle weakness, optimizing your muscle strength is always a good thing. So
okay. Exercise, eat a healthy diet. Gee, that's almost a cure for everything.
Yep. So good luck with that. Be forceful about getting your Social Security back. Try that again. Don't give up on that. And try the patient assistance programs if you want to try one of the more traditional treatments. And in the meantime, a low-fat diet with some omega-6 or omega-3 fatty acid supplementation may help. Okay? What you got, Jill?
Another listener was listening to the show on Saturday. It was great. Saturday being February 2nd, Saturday.
That's right.
And we have another show, or you guys have another show coming up in June.
Oh, no, you can say we, because you're going to be there.
June 21st. There's actually John and how do I say that? Mine
John's
and John's.
And mine.
John and mine. John and mine's 5-year anniversary.
John's
I know.
And mine.
John's and mine. Okay, there
and
you go.
My. John's and mine.
That didn't come out very good.
So
thing
what
I'm
is
not
it?
An English teacher.
It's your.
Work. Oh, it's our 5-year wedding anniversary.
Well.
Yes.
Well, hoop-dee-doo.
Exactly.
There you go.
Okay.
Me and John's.
Yeah, me and John. I was actually going to say John and I's. And how terrible does that sound? John and I's.
English language is ridiculous.
Okay. Anyway, going ahead. You said you may be able to help if I sent an email. I have a weird feeling in my chest every once in a while that almost feels like my heart is skipping a beat, and I start freaking out and getting cold sweats, and I have no idea why I get this feeling. It is not painful, just weird. If you could help me, I would be very grateful.
Sure. Well, you want to take this one, Jill?
Sure.
Yeah,
I mean, it could be a lot of different things. We don't know what other kind of health problems this person has, if any. Sometimes this can be related to other things, medications, whatever. A lot of the times this is no big deal, a normal thing, a normal variant. It could be happening from stress, since he is feeling like he's getting a little panicky and cold sweats afterwards. But if it's the palpitation and then the cold sweats and the panicking coming afterwards, it may be from activity. Sometimes your provider may suggest that you go and wear a heart monitor, an event monitor. And this is a device that you put on your body and wear for 24 hours. Most of the time you can get them that last longer than that. And you try to do an activity that will stimulate the event or the heart palpitation or right. the skipping a beat and see if it will record any abnormal activity in your heart.
Right. What so these monitors do basically is just the Holter monitor is a 24 to 48 hour thing that records every single heartbeat that you have for 24 to 48 hours. And right. then they can scan it and look for anything abnormal. He says here that, where did he say, it almost feels like my heart is skipping a beat. I'm sure that that's exactly what it is. He's having what we call a premature ventricular contraction, which is just where the heart goes. The heart's an electrical organ, and there are spikes of electricity that go through in a periodic motion that cause the heart to beat. And when the heart beats, it pumps blood. So every once in a while, you'll have beat, 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 and then the heart pauses. And as the heart pauses, it continues to fill up with blood from the outer circulatory system. And as it fills up with blood, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And then finally, it's got to start beating again. It just beat, 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 beat really hard until it finally gets back to equilibrium where what's coming in is the same as what's going out. And when you feel that, that's when you're feeling that really crazy kind of pounding in your chest. And that's what people will call the skipping of the, you know, the skip beats, whereas the skip actually happened before that. And this skip beats are a sign of a normal heart. Athletes have them more than people who aren't athletes. Most people don't notice them, though. But when you start noticing them, that can be a problem. Now, the one thing that makes me slightly concerned about this person is the fact that he says he gets the cold sweats. So that's a little bit of an abnormal symptom for a regular old skip beat. So what I would do is go to the doctor, tell them you're having these skip beats. They'll put the monitor on, and they'll check you out. Now, if you don't have the...
Hopefully we didn't get to this question too late.
Yeah, I think I emailed him on this. But one thing that... Well, it's true. Hopefully he's getting this advice in time. The other thing that they can do is a thing called an event monitor. Now, the event monitor, well, let's just say that you wear the thing for 24 hours, but it didn't happen because it only happens once every couple of weeks.
Right, and that happens. I mean, I've seen that in patients. They wear it for weeks, and then it never happens. They take it off the next week. They're like, well, it happened as soon as I gave the monitor back to you.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You may catch it, you may not.
That's a little mind-body thing going on there. But the event monitor is cool because you can keep it for a month or two, and then when you have it, then you push the button on it, and then it will record just those beats. Mm-hmm. And then they can look at them and see if there's a problem there. Most likely it's not a problem, but it's worth getting checked out just because of the sort of abnormal symptoms that he's having along with it. If it is benign premature ventricular contractions or skipped beats or what we call palpitations, there's medication that he can take. Usually they'll use a thing called a beta blocker, and it will just make them either go away or make them so that he doesn't feel them as often.
Right. And so, that could even help if going back to possible panic attacks, beta blockers help with
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. People use beta. We talked about that on Ron and Fez. People use beta blockers for stage fright.
Mm-hmm.
For stage fright. But I don't recommend that because, and this is just a completely different subject, but to use a beta blocker for stage fright, people do better when they're under pressure. And if you don't feel the adrenaline at all, you're just going to go out there and you're going to do this. I mean, I think one of the reasons that we have any success that we do have is because we're so hepped up on adrenaline during our show that we, at least sound somewhat animated. We may sound stupid, but at least we sound animated.
At least so. I sound stupid a minute ago when I was talking. You know what I should have done is went into a little Southern accent. John and I's anniversary will be
that's
that
right.
Day.
It would have sounded just perfectly normal then.
It would have sounded good, wouldn't it? It reminds me of Old Yeller.
Like she doesn't have a Southern accent now.
I know. Even a worse one. Even a worse one.
Go.
Okay. This person is actually emailing on behalf of her boyfriend. He stretched his ears to a 6-gauge. Which I assume is those little coin-like things that go in your ears. After a year, his right ear started to grow on a lump on the back. It kept getting bigger and bigger, so he took the earrings out. Now it's the size of a large pea and keeps growing. One doctor told him it was build-up scar tissue and he could have it removed. He wonders if he has it removed, will it grow back bigger?
You want to talk about keloids? You're the surgeon.
Sure. You know, you see a lot of people with these, and it is a common area to see them on the ear. Sometimes you excise it and it grows back beautifully. Sometimes you excise it and you do get a new keloid there. Sometimes doing steroid injections into the keloid can help to prevent it from getting very noticeable or very large. Sometimes you can even do a radiation treatment actually after they excise. Wow. Yeah, after they excise the scar and sew it back up, as it starts to heal again, they'll do small, very focused radiation treatments right to that skin.
Really?
Which a lot of times will prevent thick scar tissue. You're going to say something, John?
Yeah, that's because the radiation will turn off the cells that are trying to grow.
Right. So,
very nice, John.
Is that like the first time I've ever said anything that's smart?
Yeah, he's over here giving himself the thumbs up after saying that.
That's because we used the radiation after we did a huge acetabulum fracture when I was doing orthopedic trauma.
Okay, no, nobody knows what the hell you're talking about.
Well,
now
you do a pelvis fracture. You break your pelvis. Everybody knows what a pelvis is. It's what Elvis used to shake all the time.
Right.
Anyhow, after you break your pelvis and we go in and cut them open and put it back together, we would do radiation treatment in the to the hip to turn off the muscles from forming scar tissue there, which
really
would end up fusing the hip. Actually, it turns off bone because it can form outside of the hip where it's trying to regrow. Huh. So,
well, yeah. Well, give yourself another thumbs up.
I know. It's very interesting.
He's a genius. Well, keloid is simply what we call a hypertrophic scar. It's scar gone crazy. Now, the thing I would want to ask this person is, does her boyfriend make keloids normally, or is this the first keloid he's ever had? He'll know, because anytime if you're prone to keloids, anytime you've cut yourself, you will make a big giant scar. And if the answer is that this isn't a normal thing for him, which I bet it's not, because otherwise they wouldn't be asking about it.
Right, he would notice it in other parts of his body.
Then if he has it removed or excised, then he's got a pretty good chance of it not coming back.
And it could be just a cyst behind the ear. So
yeah.
Well, it could be too.
Yeah.
But it'd probably be painful if it were. Well, yeah. Not necessarily. It would only be painful probably if it were infected. Yeah. Otherwise, it would be.
But if
painful.
The doctor looked at it and said it's hypertrophic scar tissue, yeah, it probably is, because keloid. You can tell by looking at it.
That's
so
true.
It's most likely keloid. So I think that he can have it safely removed, and he's got a pretty good chance of it not coming back. Okay?
Yes.
Yay.
Very good. Okay, moving on. this is an interesting question, actually.
What a segue.
I drink like a fish, not booze, but water, green tea, energy drinks, coffee. I'll go through 6 to 8 energy drinks a day, which is way too many. I'm sure that has a ton of caffeine and calories in it, but anyway. Gallons of green tea, Red Bulls, Monsters, and a glass or two of water. I'll drink more in a day than I eat. However, I don't pee too much. I don't get up in the middle of the night. I do get blurry vision at times, and I smoke, which probably doesn't help. And occasionally my big toe goes numb and tingles at times. Is this a sign of diabetes, question? This sounds like patients that come in the office and they have like the whole list of problems circled. My head hurts, my foot hurts, my ankle hurts, my toes, my knees. What's going on?
This person has a large constellation of symptoms that—
probably all different things.
That are, when you look at them in a certain way, yes, it would make you think that possibly this was diabetes, but you would expect someone to have the numbness in the toe years after the diabetes started. And people, diabetes mellitus actually means voluminous pea that's sweet tasting, which is as opposed to diabetes insipidus, which was voluminous.
I like the way you said that.
Sweet tasting. Yeah. as opposed to diabetes insipidus, which was voluminous urine that tasted bland. Now, why did they call them these things? That's because in the old days, doctors used to actually taste people's urine to see if they had blood sugar problems, because they didn't have all these tests that we have today. Thank God for the guy who invented the glucose blood test.
You're
so I don't have to drink
then, right?
Piss
yeah,
anymore.
I was going to say, yeah.
Oh,
you joked yourself.
An AIDS joke. That's funny. All right. Jackasses.
I would say, okay, anyway. So getting back to the question, I would say that you may just have
Well, it doesn't even matter. This is the thing. It's don't even try to diagnose him.
Because in the toe going numb could be something from the low back.
Well, it could be anything. But yeah. Here's the thing. It's really easy for him to figure it out. Go to his doctor, get a blood test.
Exactly.
They can do a random blood sugar, thank you. And if it's above a certain level, then he has diabetes. They can do a glucose tolerance test where he'll drink a sugary drink, and then they check his blood sugar in a half hour, in an hour, and then another hour, and then they can see if he meets criteria for diabetes. It's really simple to find out. He's gotten in the habit of drinking all this stuff, yeah. And there may be some other issues with drinking too much fluids where you can wash out the salts in the kidneys, and you can cause all kinds of problems. So he needs to go to his doctor, get a simple blood test, tell your doctor all this stuff. I think this is – it just sounds to me like a constellation of separate symptoms rather than a whole over-encompassing single diagnosis. But go get the blood test and see. Yeah. That's the easiest thing.
Or even a urine test. They would do a urine test. And, again, not tasting the urine probably, right. Unless you go to Steve's office. I'm just teasing. I'm just giving Dr. Steve a hard time. But they could do a little glucose stick and see if you have a lot of glucose in your urine.
Right.
Too.
That's not diagnostic for
that's true.
If you have a lot of sugar in there, it would make you think, hey, this person's probably diabetic. But then what are you going to do? You're going to do the blood test.
You're going to do the blood test to see what the serum blood level is. So very good. Okay. This is also an interesting question. I am a transgendered male, not planning on having gender reassignment surgery, living most of my time in femme. How will testicular removal affect my hormone replacement therapy? Also, how will it affect my erections?
Okay. So this is a transgendered male who is not planning on having surgery, so he's going to keep his penis, or she's going to keep her penis. I always have trouble assigning those terms with transgendered males who have not gone through the surgery, so I apologize if I said it wrong. This is if he has his testicles removed, he's going to stop making testosterone. So this will stop the fight between the hormone replacement therapy and his testicles. But it will absolutely affect his ability to achieve an erection, because people who have hypogonadism, I mean, that's what that is, that's low testosterone, have difficulty with sex drive and achieving and maintaining erection. So he may have to take some testosterone replacement. And a lot of women have to do this who go through menopause, have to take a little testosterone, because testosterone is a female hormone, just like a little bit of estrogen is a male hormone. You know, males make a lot more testosterone and a little tiny bit of estrogen. Females make a ton of estrogen and a little bit of testosterone. And so there are some women that really respond to low-dose testosterone therapy, and I think she may be one of those. So
yeah. I worked with a GYN once that always would prescribe his patients, instead of just, you know, Primpro or whatever, an estrogen replacement therapy, he would always give them estrotest and say, we'll give you the estrogen to make you look pretty and the testosterone to make you horny.
Wow.
He probably didn't use the word horny, but
yeah,
I did.
That's
what he meant.
And a lot of the GYNs really are not in favor of oral testosterone therapy, because it has to pass through the liver and it can cause some problems there. So, you know, but there are things that you can do. I mean, for people who have, and we should talk about this sometime, is male hypogonadism, or so-called male menopause, where men's testicles stop producing testosterone. There are a lot of different treatments for that, and some of them are really interesting. There's this, well, I don't know how interesting it is, but there's this stuff called Androgel that's a clear gel that you just put on your skin every day, and that replaces your testosterone without it having to go through your GI tract and going through the liver, which is a problem. Well, so
now my question is, actually, I've actually got a question myself, a little bit adding on to the email. So they have not had the surgery, keeping male parts,
right?
Trying more than likely going to end up in sexual relationships,
right?
And wanting to achieve an erection,
Right.
Would Viagra, I've got to think a couple questions. Would Viagra help with this?
Yes.
And would you still be able to pop a wad or shoot a rope or whatever it is that you say for that now? Would you have an orgasm?
Yes. Yes, okay. To both.
Okay. So, okay.
Yeah. The testicles produce testosterone and sperm cells. The seminal vesicles is where semen is produced. So those aren't removed when you remove the testicles. So you can still have an orgasm, but it's going to be a little more difficult with the loss of testosterone. So, but yes, Viagra would help, but won't give you back your libido and won't, give you back the things that testosterone will do for you.
Now, the other thing I guess that I would also add to that would maybe possibly getting the pump. Isn't there a pump that you can have inserted into the penis to help achieve erections?
Yes.
Yeah. So
that's a surgical procedure.
Surgical procedure, but that may also help with erections.
Yeah. Well, that's if you really didn't want to take testosterone and you could not attain an erection at all, then, I guess the pump would be something to think about. A good urologist that deals with transgendered males would be the place to go for that. And that would be where I would start. It's going to be some urologic surgeon's going to do the orchiectomy, which is what testicular removal is called anyway. And she wants to do this for appearance. I'm not 100% sure why
that was going to be my question.
Have it done.
Yeah, to the listener, why do you want to have the testicles removed if you're worried about still having erections and you don't want to have the surgery, but yet you're taking the hormone replacement therapy? It seems
well, there are a lot of transgendered males that don't go through the gender reassignment surgery.
Well, I can understand that, but
comfortable with themselves. You know, living as women but having male genitalia.
Right.
But I would like if this person would write back to us and sort of expand on this question a little bit, we might be able to answer it a little better.
Yeah.
But
what is he looking for, or he or she? What's the outcome, I guess?
I think that if she's living as a woman, I guess we really can refer to her as she.
Right.
She needs to talk to a specialist that deals with transgendered males, but they can certainly replace the testosterone that's lost through removing the testicles if need be, and it can be done with a low dose and get the effect that she wants. So,
yeah.
Okay.
Have you ever seen that surgery?
Yes, actually, I have. It is. It's an amazing surgery.
It is amazing. It's quite amazing. Okay, moving on to another question. This is another patient that says that he or she doesn't have medical insurance. Is there anything that I can buy over the counter that will help with my psoriasis? I have had some relief using a tanning bed. There are also many claims about certain foods to avoid, certain herbs or vitamins to take that may help.
Okay. Well, psoriasis is a disorder that can be either mild. It can be in a whole continuum from mild to severe. The really mild cases, some people just choose not to do very much about them. It's a little topical steroid, some steroid creams. They take care of them. The severe cases really need some pretty intensive treatment. Itchy, sore patches of skin, a lot of times on the joints, the flexor joints like the elbow and the knees, and cause this thing called the Kebner phenomenon, which is where you scratch the skin and then these plaques will form along the scratch. Now, the standard allopathic, which is what we are, we're allopathic providers, which means we push pills for the most part. The normal allopathic treatments for psoriasis are steroids, phototherapy, which is UV radiation, and these medications called biologics. Now, biologics include chemotherapy agents like cyclosporin and methotrexate, and then there are these new things called tumor necrosis factor alpha blockers like Enbrel and Remicade. You've seen these ads on TV for rheumatoid arthritis for those, and these are medications that are unbelievably expensive and are pretty much reserved for the most serious cases of psoriasis. Now, what about alternative treatments? Regular bathing, using some, and some people advocate using sea salts in your bath. Do your own phototherapy. Now, tanning bed, I think, was it he or she that wrote that? Do we know?
She.
It was a she. Did she say that she,
yeah, so she has seen some relief from using some the tanning
relief.
Bed.
Mm-hmm. One of the reasons that she hasn't had a lot of relief from the tanning bed is because, as my understanding is, that most of the tanning beds have more UVA than they do UVB.
Mm-hmm. I think that's right.
Or it may be the other way around.
More UVB and not enough UVA. That's what I was going to say, actually. I was going to say it the other way around.
Yeah, because UVA is what they use in the dermatologist's
right,
office.
Right, in the UVA boxes.
And they may not be getting as much of that from the tanning bed. Mm-hmm. So, and there may be people who own tanning salons that are just screaming at their computer right now because I got that backwards. But I know that the dermatologist will use Sorolin and then UVA, and it's called PUVA therapy. It's kind of an old school therapy. But phototherapy is still a big thing. But you can do your own phototherapy. Go outside when That's it's right. sunny. And that way you're getting lots of UVA and lots of UVB. Okay. Keep your skin moisturized and get a lot of sleep, because the theory is that you repair your body at night when you're sleeping. So, you know, and go see a dermatologist.
And be careful if you go in the sun. Don't get too much.
Don't go crazy.
And don't get burned. So exactly. That's very important as well. Okay, so actually our last question of the night, which is also an interesting question. This is a male who writes in saying, my left nipple is very sensitive. One day I decided to squeeze it. I just think that sounds funny.
Really?
I decided to squeeze my sensitive nipple. And two different liquids came out slowly. One clear, one brown. Any idea what it is and what suggestions do you have?
Okay. No, I don't know what it is, but I do know it needs to be checked out.
Yes, I agree.
Brown discharge from the nipple anytime needs to be examined by a doctor. What they'll do is they'll get you to express some onto a slide, and then they'll look at it under the microscope. They also will probably do a mammogram, which men can have too. It's just an X-ray of the breast tissue or an ultrasound of the area. And I think this needs to be checked out. It's just as likely to be something completely innocuous, but not something to be just ignored either.
Right. It could be something in the breast alone. It could be hormonal.
Sure. And if this person
if his nipple was sensitive, he may have even had, you know, he could have some kind of inflammatory thing going on in the breast too. Yep. I mean, so
if he's 12 or 13, it's actually normal to see little breast buds, which are, you know, it's hard tissue behind the nipple in boys.
Well, I wouldn't think a 12 or 13-year-old would be listening to your show.
Exactly, or emailing me that particular question.
Know.
So just
know.
Throwing that out.
Never know.
Anyway, is that it? That all we got?
That's all the questions for tonight.
We have hundreds of questions in the backlog, and these are the ones that we were able to get to tonight. We'll continue to do these podcasts. We need to do them because we need to practice. We need to practice with Jill and get her in here, and we need to get John actually not cowering in the corner when his wife is on mic so that he'll actually talk and say a few things. Although he threw out some good stuff there tonight.
Yeah, and it's also doesn't hurt
oh,
that
Jesus.
I don't have a microphone and I want to miss the post. Or earphones.
Yeah, okay, we'll work on that. John doesn't have headphones and he doesn't have a microphone. He's sharing one with his wife. And that's apparently a problem. So, okay. Well, listen, email us, drsteve202@gmail.com, pajohn202@gmail.com. Pretty soon we'll have pajill202@gmail.com. Check out our website at drsteve.com. If you, there's the post. I'm not even paying any attention
there
to it. Missed
Tune
it again.
In June
Missed
21st,
it every time.
2008.
Yeah. Tune in June 21st, 2008. And we hope to see you guys in New York. If, you know, come by after the show, we'll hang. And I really just want to say a couple of things. We've got about a minute. Ron Bennington, not a finer broadcaster has ever lived. This guy has really been supportive of our show, and we really, really, really appreciate it. Fez Watley, genius. This whole thing happened because Opie threw out a suggestion that the listeners should make up their own show, and that's where this came from. And Anthony Cumia has been there every time we broadcast and been very supportive. So those guys cannot be beat. We really appreciate them. So thanks, everybody. We really appreciate the people that listen to our show as well. And thank you for your comments. And have a great week. Stay healthy. For PA John and PA Jill, I'm Dr. Steve.
See ya.
Have a good and healthy week, and we'll see you next week.
See ya.